sort of a thought question, and I meant to look a bit more. That's totally escaped my mind, but we talk about stories, and the Bible's full of stories. Well, does anybody know what the Ziphites are known for? I doubt it, because I didn't know what they, I mean, you know, this is like totally obscure. But it's part of the story that in the Old Testament, they twice betrayed David and told Saul where to find him. And this is echoed in a psalm of David, Psalm 54. But nobody seems to have any idea why they were so loyal to Saul and so against David. And why this story is just interesting that it's recorded. They did this twice, you know. David's trying to escape Saul, and the Ziphites run to Saul and say, here's where David is, you know. I don't know whether they thought they were going to get something out of that or not. That's a good point, too, yeah. You know, there's probably...
I didn't ever touch her, but you can kill
her. Right. He gave Solomon a short list, but I think Ray's right. There's probably a bigger list of several people that... but who in the world were the Ziphites that they... Not only that they betrayed David, but that it's recorded that they did, and that's all it said. So that's... You know, when I thought about that... Somewhere into the night last night, I'm thinking, you know, that's really connects with this idea. I already had this in here, you know. And then I realized that connects with this idea of telling stories. It's just part of the story, and it makes you wonder, makes you think. And that's what stories, I think, are for. So David's class, I kept this one in here. This is sort of the basic theme where the Bible records that basically Jesus used parables in all of his lessons and all of his discussions. You know, it says he said nothing to them without a parable. Well, that's a little bit of a little exaggeration, I'm sure, you know. But the meaning is clear. He used this as sort of his main approach to people, you know, grabbing them with a story. And so here's a little quote I found from a writer, Tish Harrison Warren, who's quoting someone else, which is also part of the story thing. You read a book and they're quoting somebody who's maybe quoting somebody else. Francis Spufford writes, "We don't have an argument that solves the problem of the cruel world, but we have a story. This is why, no matter what we claim to believe or disbelieve, what rises to the surface in our most vulnerable moments is inevitably the story on which we build our lives." So I think that's the story of Christ, you know. That's what we're building our lives for, and Paul talks about that as a foundation. You know, there's no better foundation than that which is laid, which is Christ. And so actually, I didn't prepare enough for this, but remember last week, David told this story about the two men in the hospital, and one by the window, and he's describing all these wonderful things, and the other man is appreciative in a way, but then he gets jealous, and he turns out not to help the first man so that he can get a seat by the window. And just, I mean, it's part of the story. Just imagine the shock when he first rises up to look out that window he's been thinking about and dreaming about for who knows how long, and there's nothing but a blank wall. I mean, it's just, that's that grab that makes you think, you know, wow. And so, it's a story within a story, and I'm reminded of another story that I'm probably not going to be able to get through because it tugs at you so emotionally, and I'm just going to let you read it because I know I can't do it, but this is what, you know, a story can do for you. It just grabs you by the heart, and this is a story called The Last Leaf by O. Henry, and like I say, I won't be able to get through it, so I'm not going to even talk about it. But if you can read it, this is a great story, and it's a story about self-sacrifice. It's a story where, you know, as you read along, of course, a lot of prose with this, I just summarized it. As you read along, you're affected by the characters in the story. And then when it comes to the end, you're just blown away. And you'd have to be near dead to not feel this in this story. So if I just said, you know, hey, we ought to be self-sacrificial and give, you know, do something for other people. That's pretty emotionally flat, isn't it? You tell a story like this, and you just think, wow. And that's really what the story of Christ should be to us. And so anyway, I wanted to just throw that out there and think, you know, stories can be so emotional, and maybe that's why we don't always tell our stories. You know, we a lot of times can't talk about our problems because we do get so emotionally involved. I mean, if they're our problems. But we need to be able to share no matter what. So, like I say, I'm sorry I can't read that, but I've learned a long time ago. If Steve can verify, I get choked up, but it's just done. I mean, Steve's had to lead me away before, you know, till I could regain my composure. But again, that's what stories are about. You listen to stories, you hear people's stories. And even what Lindsay was talking about, you know, that's a gripping story of someone in that kind of a struggle. And it makes you, you know, makes you want to do something to help. And so the message of the story of the last leaf was, you know, there are people that will sacrifice themselves for someone else's good. And that's an amazing thing. But the greatest occurrence of that kind of story is Christ, because he had so much to give up, and it really was at risk. If you don't think it was at risk, then I don't think you can see this story in the right context, you know. So this is just echoing some of David's. What elements made the story work? Well, you know, he describes the people again. I just had a summary, but there's more description. You get attached to these people as an artist who's sick and just given up. And you think, you know, if you've ever felt like that, you especially, you're gripped into this story, you know. I have no reason to go on. And so when was the listener's expectations shocked? Well, it's just right at the end. Now, one of the more famous O. Henry stories is The Gift of the Magi, which similarly, you know, right at the end, there's the grabber, you know. And so the point is, again, I see a great correspondence in this kind of story to the self-sacrifice of Christ. And we hear the story of Christ so often, you know, we get a little immune emotionally, I think. But, you know, we need to fully plumb the depths of that story every time. So I'm going to step back for a second. David was not able to discuss the last slide from the lesson about Elijah. And he connects this with James chapter 5, verses 13 through 20. And because it basically references, you know, what Elijah did. But James is trying to give a lesson. He says, is anyone among you in trouble? Let him pray. Is anyone happy? Let them sing songs of praise. Is any among you sick? Let them call the elders of the church to pray over them and anoint them with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well. The Lord will raise them up. If they've sinned, they'll be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. And then he brings it in about Elijah. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its crops. And so David is just saying, consider that it's not just the people at that time, at the time of that incident, that are affected. But here was James affected 2,000 years later with this story, you know, with this history of how God responds when it, of course, fits his purpose. So I just think I wanted to go on and tell that part of the story that he wasn't able to for, because of time. And I also want to, we talk about the stories in the sense of, you know, listing the stories, but, you know, we all tell stories. And, you know, David and I share a few stories about each other that, you know, on my part, his stories about him are always true. And that's all I want to say about that.
And they get better and better.
Yeah, it's like the fish that gets longer. They do get better and better, you know. Some of them are recorded. Someday, maybe, they'll be a book of stories of the trail. Or, anyways. So, you know, and I tell people who have to stand in front of other people, and they were nervous, and I've been that way. I was a wreck for years, you know, trying to do this. And yet I found that if you're telling a story, and people are telling stories, you get a bunch of people around, you know, you're telling a story, it's not a problem. But when you think you have to maybe structure it and it's a speech, then that's bad. And so I counsel myself and other people, just tell a story. Tell it as a story like you were just telling what happened. And I'll never forget, I had to have an oral exam. Now, that's not a dentist kind of thing. That's where you just meet with your advisors and they ask you a bunch of questions. And it's just a nerve-wracking thing to even think about it. And my advisor, Dr. Mason, said, "There's nobody that knows what you did better than you do." And that's essentially what he's saying. Tell your story. It's your story. You can't really mess that up. I mean, unless you go brain dead in the middle of it, which has happened to be a few times, and possibly even right now. But so telling stories is how we share information. We share our lives. And so it's not just about listening to stories, it's about being able to tell them too, and especially, you know, and when we're talking to others about God. So David next goes into this cartoon about the human senses, and he says, "Have you ever thought much about the distinctive characteristics of our five senses?" And what he brings out is how sensitive some of them can be, you know, in terms of range. You know, how far can you see? Supposedly you can see a candle from a few miles away on a dark night. You know, think about it, that's incredible. And you know, how accurately can you position yourself or position what you hear, you know, with your ears? You know, how sensitive can you, like a dog can smell things, you know, and have recorded in memory all the, you know, and we have some ability to do that. But, you know, how sensitive are you? You know, women generally more sensitive in their sense of smell, you know, believe it or not. It's very true. And so, anyway, he's just talking about, you know, we describe things, and he uses popcorn as an example and all the different senses and just all the different characteristics. And his main point is, the complexity of it. Tom and I were talking about the idea of random evolution producing something so complicated. And, you know, I cannot believe it. It is beyond belief that there isn't a design, there isn't a designer. And then I think about, you know, God creating all this and designing all this, and he loves to create, because that's a, you know, it's not a simple block. You know, like you build with blocks or something, something real simple. This is really complicated stuff. Life is so complicated. The universe is complicated. But he also brings out, again, trying to illustrate how sensitive our senses can be. He brings out this example from two stars in the Big Dipper. He says, from our vantage point, they're only 2/10 of a degree apart, which basically means you can't tell, you know, they look like one thing. They're 82 and 83 light years away from Earth. And so if you look at the Milky Way tonight, the light from either one of these stars was emitted in 1941. And this is a near star, you know. And he's just saying, you know, our bodies have this capability to detect incredible things, and yet we're so lacking in so many ways, you know, they're not complete. And then he brings up a TED talk, which I decided not to try the complication of actually running this, so I'm just going to tell the story. But he says this David Phillips gets up and he talks about a man who, doing an experiment, he went online like Amazon. He bought 200 items for on the order of a dollar a piece. Actually, he only spent $129. And he emailed 200 people, writers, I think, mostly, and said, write a story about, he gave each one of them an item, and he says, write a story about it, you know, some kind of story, you know. Obviously not true, because they didn't know, they just wrote a story about these items. And I just want to note that the title of this has to do with magic and science, so that's kind of interesting. But anyway, so the man receives 200 stories, and he puts them all on eBay or whatever. And out of his $129 investment, he sold these items for $8,000 just because they had a story attached to them, which may or may not have been true, which likely weren't true. But telling the story made them more valuable. And it's just kind of interesting. And one of the items that's be shown in this slide, this item is some kind of horse's head, you know. Everybody needs one of these, right? So he bought it for I think he bought this one for a dollar, and someone bought it for $69 and some odd cents. Just because, I mean, that's marketing, isn't it? You know, that is true marketing. That's an amazing experiment. And yet, you know how true it can be. And so just imagine, the prospective buyer can't touch it, feel it, smell it, you know, taste it, whatever. And yet somebody willing to pay $70 for this horse's head. Right. Right.
You know, it somehow it triggers your senses as you read the story. It is an amazing way that it engages all of it, not just your eyes and your brain.
I think that's right. We all experience many things, the smells and the sights and things, and then somebody tells a story, and like Ray says, it brings out things you've experienced and that you can relate to. And if you tell the story well, you know, great stories really do a lot of work on character development. If you watch a TV show or something, you know, it's not just person A and person B hunting for clues. There's characters. That's what's fun to watch, is people that are maybe a little odd or whatever, but they're different. They're quirky or whatever. That's kind of shows I like to watch anyways. But you're right. It a good story really makes you. It correlates with things that's happened to you, and it emphasizes things, and it makes you get it. You know, that's the whole thing. Do you get it or not? And Jesus, you know, wanders with his disciples for 3 years, telling them stuff, and it's like the parable of the sower. He says, did you not get it? You know, all right, I'll explain it to you. And then towards the end, I think it's in John, you know, toward in the last chapters, he says, finally you understand. And I just think that's a great line. He says, you finally get it. You know, after all, and of course, you know, that's a little discouraging to go around and tell these wonderful stories, and some people got it, but they didn't like it, you know, and that's why Christ was crucified. It's not quite that they didn't get it, but they didn't want it. So, but you're right. Based on our experiences, we have these impacts. And, you know, one of the arguments for reading the Bible, like every year, is that your life changes. You have new experiences. And you'll read it again and you'll say, oh, wait a minute. I feel that different now. So that's my advice is to keep reading, because it just, if your life was static and nothing ever changed, then maybe, I've told it before, but I remember being at a devotional camp one time, and a guy stood up and said, he read the Bible and he was done, one time. I'm like, okay, you must be a lot sharper than I am, because it takes me a bunch of times, and I'm still, finding stuff. So anyways, so the actual lesson, which we have a few minutes to pursue, is it's about, this is one of the greatest short parable stories, I think, in the New Testament. And this is where, there's the comparison of two men. And we'll just read it in Luke 18, verses 9 through 14. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. So here we are. Here's people with their experience. They're confident that they're good and that they're what God wants. And he says, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. And so these people who are confident in their own righteousness, what do you think they expect from this story? Anybody want to venture? What's in my mind? It's dangerous territory, but I'm sure they thought, oh boy, Jesus is going to pound on the tax collector. Going to talk about how good the righteous man is, or whatever, the one who thought he was righteous. And the Pharisee and the tax collector, they're just scum. And Jesus is going to let them have it. And so, just imagine, I'm sure that's what they felt. Oh boy, it's going to be a good one, And then, I'm sorry, I'm not keeping up. Then the Pharisee stands by himself and prays, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. I mean, I can almost hear the applause, We heard a lot of applause yesterday, 800 students, Anyways, I'm just saying, oh man, this is great. This man, we love this. And then he says, but the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And so I still don't think that the crowd has got it, They're like, what a poor schmuck this guy is, Yeah, this tax collector, he's just dirt, And then Jesus is about to lower the boom. He says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, the man he just talked about, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Wow. Can you imagine just the everybody just smacked in the face, whoa, that wasn't the way we thought this was going to go. We had a whole different, what is that expression? I just thought that was going to go a whole different way. And yeah, didn't, you're right. Yeah, did this solve the whole problem of the way people felt about tax collectors? Probably not, But he made people think about it, and he makes us think about it. And so it didn't solve the problem, and even when we get it, but it should lead us toward a little bit better understanding, of what real humility is and what God wants. In Psalm 51 it says, a broken and contrite heart God does not despise. What does that say? It says Pharisees needs to change, his way of thinking. Now, that's a very general thing, the Pharisees. But in general, the Pharisees did not like what Christ was saying. But there were Pharisees that believed and ultimately helped him, especially in his burial and stuff. So this other expression, David quotes a Dr. Orpheus Hayward, who says, "The Pharisee compared himself to the tax collector, but the tax collector compared himself to God." So, I mean, in a sense, I think the Pharisee compared himself to God too. Like, I'm good. God will love me because I'm like God, you know. So, any comments on that? Right? Exactly.
The most powerful thing is these ladies standing up, some of them 20 years in addiction, not working, not paying taxes, not being a citizen, being a drain, losing their children, you know, not thinking they're ever going to be able to function in society. And through what seems like a miracle, the Lord delivers them from it. And they turn around.
Right. I think you're so right, though, about the people who tell their stories is so much powerful than someone else is telling them. Sometimes you have to have somebody else do it, but boy, that hearing that, Lindsay. I agree. And you know, as you were saying that, it dawned on me that the tax collector told his story. Right there, the tax collector, he didn't tell his whole history. But he told his story in a sense of, here's how I stand before God, you know, and I'm not worthy. Right. But, yeah, sometimes we get into that, you know, I do such a good work, God needs me. And I've always, you know, I think I mentioned before, but that idea when you stick your hand in the water, stick your hand in a bucket of water, and when you pull it out, it doesn't leave a hole. It just, and God is able to just, anything happens to any of us, no matter how wonderful we are, somebody else is waiting, and he can make use. And he generally makes use of those who aren't perfect, you know. That's the stories in the Bible. All right, thanks for your attention. And next week, it'll be me again. So plan your activities accordingly, I guess.
It's me again,
Margaret. Yeah, that's right.